Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I'm now joined by David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. Cobb, did you see the Edie Connect showdown last night during the Grizzlies-Lakers game at the free throw line?
Okay, I watched the game, but I might have missed this. Break it down for me. What did we get there?
Friend of the program, Sam Shoemaker, has a video of Edie and Connect battling each other, trying to get ready to grab a rebound. And Edie is just putting his hand on Connect's chest over and over and over again. And eventually Connect just slaps it away and looks at him. And, you know, do you have any reason why these two guys may not like each other? Any thoughts?
Hey, I was courtside covering that Elite Eight game. That was one of the best games that I've seen in person. That Dalton Connect and Zach Edey going back and forth, and Zach Edey got the best of him. Those two were clearly the best players in college basketball. And I think Dalton Connect probably thinks that he should have gotten drafted before Zach Edey. He probably thinks he should have been National Player of the Year ahead of Zach Edey. And then last night, as has been the case throughout, Zach Edey continues to have really good games against the Lakers, which I'm sure it is annoying. Dalton Connect. I just found his video. That's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
I love
it's
that.
So petty
I love
too,
that.
Because it just looks like two kids fighting in front of their parents, and it's like they just annoying the hell out of each other. I do, to your point though, Zach Edey does continue to have good games against the Los Angeles Lakers, and later on in the Blitz, George and I are going to get into why we think Zach Edey needs to be deployed a little bit more. When you're having matchups against a big like Anthony Davis, who had a massive, massive night last night. And then once Zach Edey got a few more minutes, he seemed to slow down a little bit, because Edey last night was 13-10 with eight offensive rebounds. Are you curious what Dalton Connect had last night? Do you want me to read off his stat line?
No, I know. They're bringing him off the bench now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's shifted. I'm starting to look like a delusional Tennessee fan who just doesn't understand basketball. That's what's happening. But you can read me the statistics if you want. I probably deserve it.
Last 10 games, 29% from three. Are we worried about Dalton Connect?
No, not long term, but in the short term, he's struggling. He's going through the rookie struggles. I mean, Pete laid it out on the broadcast last night. He laid out how bad he'd been recently. But fact is, he's still shooting around 38% from three.
Right.
I just feel like the Lakers just run such garbage offense that it's hard for guys to get in a rhythm, because everything is just orchestrated towards getting the ball on the elbow to AD or LeBron. And I don't know. Like, I'm not making excuses for Dalton Connect, but I feel like the Lakers have gotten away from actually being intentional about integrating him into their offense.
Yeah, the Lakers are a very interesting basketball team, because you'll have some nights where Anthony Davis will show up and look like the best player in the NBA. Some nights he completely no-shows. LeBron, he's been up and down this season. He just came back from his quote-unquote vacation that he takes every few seasons and looks a lot better. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do moving forward. But I do want to move on to college football. I appreciate you being a good sport about Zach Edey and Dalton Connect, but we do have a new Heisman Trophy winner, Travis Hunter, 2,231 total points. Ashton Jeanty, 2,017 total points. Closest Heisman race we saw since 2009. Did they get it right with who won the Heisman?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Ashton Jeanty was incredible this year, and a lot of years what he did would be enough. But you know what? Most years you don't have a guy who is the best cornerback and best wide receiver in the sport. I mean, it's just what Travis Hunter did this season is unlike anything we've ever seen in college football. I mean, 92 receptions and then just a clear lockdown, game-changing cornerback. I mean, won Colorado games as a corner, won Colorado games as a receiver. I mean, it's incredible. Think about where Deion Sanders in Colorado would be right now without Travis Hunter. If he had Shador, they'd still be a bowl team. They still would have made progress. But Travis Hunter by himself has elevated that program in a way that, like, you just – I'm sorry. Ashton Jeanty was phenomenal. But I don't care who you are as a running back. You are never going to be as valuable to your team as Travis Hunter was to Colorado. And, I mean, absolutely deserving. And I don't buy for 1 second that, like, oh, he just got the vote because the media loves Colorado and these voters – were just ensnared by Deion Sanders. That's actually not true. I mean, I feel like a lot of the Heisman voters are sort of your old school media who have looked at Deion Sanders as skeptically as anybody. And so to think that he somehow got the benefit of the doubt for his player because he's Coach Prime and all this, I don't think that holds any weight whatsoever. I mean, I think people just looked at what Travis Hunter did and correctly decided that he deserved the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, you know, I don't really have a huge issue with Travis Hunter winning. I was an Ashton Jeanty supporter because I just think that doing something that we haven't seen since Barry Sanders was pretty remarkable, and I do think that he deserves credit for getting Boise State to the College Football Playoff because that is an accomplishment in and of itself. But when you look at Travis Hunter, I couldn't really make an argument against him. I don't know if I agree that he is the best wide receiver in the country or the best cornerback in the country, but the amount of snaps that he had to do, the athleticism he had to show, and to your point, he won them a couple of football games on both sides of the ball. That's why I have no real issue with him winning, and if anything, I'm just happy that it wasn't somebody from Alabama or Ohio State or a quarterback. Like, they went and gave it to somebody that was unique, and I think that is important for the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, and I think, like, if Ashton Jeanty had this type of season last year, he was great last year,
right?
But he wasn't this great. Like, I think you could argue that he would have deserved it over Jaden Daniels. I think it might have been even closer than the vote was with Travis Hunter. Or you go back to, like, the COVID year when Devontae Smith, the receiver for Alabama, won it. I think Ashton Jeanty would have won it over Devontae Smith. I just think what Travis Hunter did was so unique and unrepeatable. I mean, well, when's the next time we're going to see somebody do what Travis Hunter did in terms of being dominant on both sides of the football,
right?
Playing a full diet of snaps, by the way. I mean, because there have been guys, right, like Charles Woodson had some packages, Champ Bailey had some packages on offense, and they were utilized on both sides of the football. But the down-to-down on both sides, playing at altitude, the durability – It's just different. He's the Shohei Ohtani of college football, and it makes you wonder, right? Like, what it's going to look like at the next level, because all he's ever had is people telling him that, no, dude, you can't play both sides of the ball in college. That's crazy. And then, you know, that's going to be the same conversation we have going into the 2025 NFL draft. Is no, there's no way Travis Hunter can't play both sides of the football in the NFL. That's insane. That's crazy. But boy, I tell you what, he doesn't get to pick where he gets to go. But I have a really good feeling that when he's in meetings with franchises, he's going to tell them, "Hey, don't pick me if you don't want me to play both sides of the football." Because you know, I think he wants to keep doing it. I think that's something that's really important to him, and clearly, it's gotten him pretty far to this point and worked out for him well up until now.
Yeah, it's a conversation that Gabe and I have been having pretty much all season because we've been big supporters of Colorado. I love what Coach Prime is doing out there. I think that he deserves a lot of credit taking a team that had one win a few years ago to bowl eligibility. He's getting players. He's doing it the right way. I think that the Travis Hunter story is fantastic. He followed Deion. HBCU could have gone to a school like Florida State but decided to do it with Coach Prime, and it's one of the better stories in college football. And that's why I will say some of the criticism I've seen towards Travis Hunter seems very unfair. This is a 4.0 kid. He's doing everything right. So, you know, I think it's a really, really good story. But it is interesting because Colorado has just been such a hot-button issue for so long. And when you talk about a guy like Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders and going to the NFL draft, a lot of people have this assumption that Prime is going to have a big influence on where they go. Do you agree with that? And to be honest, do you think it's the right move for him to have influence on where they end up?
Yeah, I think with his son in particular, with Shedeur, Deion carries weight. Like, he can throw his weight around. You flash back to when Eli Manning was drafted, mm-hmm. Over 20 years ago now, or about 20 years ago.
Oh,
you remember his family, like, pitched a fit whenever the Chargers were maybe going to draft him. And so he ends up with the Giants, right? And, you know, when you're that first family of football, you sort of get that influence. And if Deion Sanders is out here blackballing certain franchises or telling certain franchises not to draft his son, that's going to carry a whole lot more weight than some random quarterback's dad trying to dictate the terms, right? Because Deion Sanders is not somebody to be messed with, and he still carries a lot of influence. So, yeah, I think to a certain extent, like, he will have an impact to whatever extent he wants on where Shedeur ends up. I mean, it's the NFL, and, like, you know, ultimately you get drafted, you don't get to pick where you want to go, but you can influence it for sure. So I would be pretty surprised if Deion Sanders doesn't do that. Now, with Travis Hunter, I think it's a little bit of a different situation because it's not his son. Like, they, obviously they're super close, and it's also a different position. Quarterback is so fit oriented. I mean, Travis Hunter could go to any franchise in the NFL mm-hmm. and probably be one of the best players in the league within his first couple of seasons. Shedeur Sanders, he's a quarterback, so it's more dependent on fit. It's more dependent on scheme. Does Deion Sanders have a relationship or an opinion on the specific offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach, you know, at certain franchises, right? So, like, in that sense, I think Deion will be more active in the draft process with Shedeur.
Transitioning to college basketball, big win for Memphis this past weekend. Went into Clemson, number 16, got a big win in overtime, and a lot of people have been making comparisons of this Memphis Tigers team this season to last season. What have you noticed the biggest differences are between the two teams?
Well, P.J. Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, and Colby Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three big differences with this year's team. I mean, the guard play is just insane, and you keep waiting for the three-point shooting to come back to earth. And, boy, it sure didn't against Clemson. I mean, 12 of 25 from deep. That was, you know what, just the grit and the ability to win close games.
Yep.
Down the stretch. Like, for instance, they're down 6, I think, with around 2 minutes left to go in that game. And I'm thinking, okay, they're out of gas. You know, they're worn down. Even if this thing goes to overtime, they're not going to have the legs to get it done. And then somehow, some way, they find a way. And I thought what was great about that game from Memphis was the fact that they got it done, even on a night where P.J. Haggerty wasn't quite at his best. I mean, he still reached double figures, but, I mean, for the most part, that was Tyrese Hunter and Colby Rogers carrying the show down the stretch. And then I thought, too, the fact that when Musa Cisse fouled out, they were still able to get that thing to the finish line with Dane Danger giving them something. You know, I like the dual big approach there that they have because those guys are so different. Danger, more offensive-oriented. Cisse, obviously, a stud rim protector. And the fact that, you know, those guys can kind of fill in for one another and they can go matchup-based, man, that's huge, like, when you have two bigs like that. So, you know, like, there's still issues to be resolved. It's not a perfect team. But, boy, when you can go on the road early in the morning like that and beat a team like Clemson, that's – you know, especially coming off the Arkansas State loss.
Right.
I mean, just super impressed, super necessary. And Connor, now the next challenge is being that motivated for what's honestly a pretty bad Virginia team.
Yeah, brand name. They've got the brand name there, but they're going through so much program change right now that it is one of those games that you hope Memphis goes into and just takes care of business. And to your point, there are still some areas in which they need to improve. Most notably, it's that first half. You know, they can't shoot a terrible percentage in the first half and try to claw their way back in the second half. And I think that's one of the reasons the Clemson game was so impressive, is that it was a great game in the first half, and then in the second half, they really were able to close it when they needed to. And then in overtime, I was so impressed, because like you said, Musa Cisse had fouled out, and Tyrese Hunter just kept hitting big shots. I found this stat today that I found fascinating. When you look at college basketball and how many players are only shooting 35% or better from three, it's a very small list of players compared to how many guys we have in D1. And the Memphis Tigers are kind of littered in there. Right now, Tyrese Hunter is shooting 52% from three. And I know that's not sustainable, but do you think the early season shooting of the Memphis Tigers has shown that it's going to be a bonus for this team this year? Because Colby Rogers was a big guy that they brought in from the transfer portal. He's been known as a three-point shooter. He's knocking him down. We saw that P.J. Haggerty last season didn't take a lot of them, but down the stretch, he got kind of streaky there, and he put together some big three-point shooting games. Mm-hmm. And then Tyrese Hunter has shown up and just been the veteran leader that this Tigers team has been desperately needing the last few seasons. I understand that, you know, you had a guy like David Jones last year, but it felt like you were asking him to do too much, and he wasn't necessarily the vocal leader that they needed. But Tyrese Hunter has stepped in and been that for the Tigers this year.
Yeah, no doubt. So one of the big differences between this year's team and last year's team is the pressure that P.J. Haggerty puts on the rim. Like, mm-hmm. his ability to collapse the defense is not really something that they had last year. Like, yes, Javon Quinterly was a good ball handler. Don't think you necessarily had to respect him attacking the rim.
No.
Or double-team him when he's getting into the paint in the same way that you do now this season with a P.J. Haggerty. And then you can spray it out now when you get that double-team to come, or you can dump it off to a couple of competent bigs down low. I mean, Malcolm Dandridge was a fine player, but you know, I think I'd take Musa Cisse or Dane Danger trying to finish through traffic at the rim, you know, over Malco. And so, like, there's just the pieces just fit together better this year than they did a year ago. And part of that is due to, you know, they don't have a choice on this, but their rotation is just so short, and guys have already gotten comfortable playing together. And I've heard Jason Muntz talk about this a lot, and there's probably some validity to it. I'm almost certain there is. These guys got to campus early and started working out together, playing uh-huh. pickup together early. And that matters in today's college basketball landscape where, you know, you go to KenPom and you look at Memphis's minutes continuity, right, which is basically just a measurement of, you know, have these guys played together before? They're like way down in the 300s on that. And so the fact that they were able to get there early, start developing chemistry, pretty significant. And so, you know, the Tyrese Hunter three-point shooting numbers, the Colby Rogers three-point shooting numbers, they're as much a reflection of the way the team plays together as they are, you know, the skill sets of those individuals. And so fact is, you got a guy like Haggerty who puts pressure on the rim, creates open looks for other players. And so, yeah, it's not sustainable for Tyrese Hunter to shoot 52%.
Sure.
But, I mean, heck, we said the same thing about Reed Shepherd last year, and he ended up dang near 50% for Kentucky. You know, we've got a longer track record of data with Tyrese Hunter. That kind of tells us it's not likely, you know. But, even if he stays around, if he closes the season at around 40%, you know, even with some of that regression, I still think that would set Memphis up to have success in the AAC.
Yeah, if Tyrese Hunter shoots 50% from three this season, give him a key to the city. Give him a key to the city. He would absolutely deserve it. But, David Cobb, I very much appreciate you, my friend. I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
All right, brother. Sounds good.
That was David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. When we come back, we got to get into the blitz. And unfortunately, George, we have to talk about our good friend Parker Fleming and what he put out into the world on Friday night after that Nets game and then what happened the next day. Parker, you may not want to listen to the blitz. Stick around. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 99 FM ESPN. George, just as always, absolutely cooking on the music. Cooking on the music. Every day on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we do the Blitz. Got to do it right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Dennis Schroeder has been traded to the Golden State Warriors for DeAnthony Melton, Reese Beekman, and multiple draft picks. Question for you, Connor, as you alluded to at the end of the conversation with Cobb, is this Parker Fleming's fault?
Yes. Yes, this is Parker Fleming's fault. We will bash him on Friday when we have him on the show during his segment. Parker has powers, apparently, and Friday night, after Dennis Schroeder got into it with the Memphis Grizzlies, which it's just a hilarious clip to go back and watch,
so hilarious clip.
Basically, what he was saying was that they busted the Grizzlies a couple of times previously, which, to be fair,
they did.
They did. And then Taylor Jenkins was basically like, are you going to let him talk to me like that? Which, you know, I love Jenkins. I think that Anthony Sanders put it perfectly. He's kind of like Fozzie Bear from Toy Story 3, where he will blow up eventually, but he's nice. He's nice in most moments, but you can feel that anger bubbling every once in a while. And I have really enjoyed the fiery Taylor Jenkins of the last few weeks that we have seen. But he is one of those players where the Memphis Grizzlies and the fandom here, we just don't like the dude. Just don't like him. He's a really good basketball player. He's a gritty player. But God, he's annoying. He loves to talk S. And Parker on Friday said, a Western Conference team needs to trade for him so that we can keep this rivalry running. And guess what happened the next day? The Golden State Warriors traded for him. D'Anthony Melton. RIP, man. I'm really sad with what's happened to D'Anthony Melton this season. He has a torn ACL, but he was included during this trade to get Dennis Schroeder, and other people included. Reese Beekman, do you know who he is?
I don't.
I also do not. 3 second-round picks, 2026, 2028 via Atlanta, and 2029 via Golden State are going to Brooklyn for Dennis Schroeder and a 2025 second-round pick. Now, this is a great trade for Golden State, and I really hate that. This damn team will not die and go away. They just will not die and go away. But the reason they had to make this trade, and the reason it's a very good trade, is one, D'Anthony Melton cannot play the rest of the season. He was an important piece for them when he was healthy. But unfortunately, Melt has just not been able to stay healthy since he left Memphis. And to be quite honest, he couldn't really stay healthy when he was here. I absolutely loved him. I was the founder of D'Anthony Melton Island, ultimate glue guy when he is healthy and in there. But he wasn't able to get it done this year for them because of his injury, so they had to ship him off for assets. And what they got back was a very good basketball player. To be quite honest with you, I was a little surprised they were able to get him for this price. If anything, it may be signaling that the Brooklyn Nets are in selling mode, which is why today we got some reports that the Memphis Grizzlies may be having conversations with the Nets about one Dorian Finney-Smith, somebody who I would be in favor of getting for the Grizzlies. I do think that we have too many guys right now, too many good guys right now. It's a good problem to have, but a consolidation trade wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. If they don't make a trade, I think that's okay too. But I would like to see if they could make a call on Dorian Finney-Smith and get him, because it does seem like they are in selling mode. He is shooting a career best from three this season. He can give you plus minutes on the defensive end. And if you send something like Luke and Jake up there, hey, no problem at all. No problem at all. I think that would help improve your team. But to the Golden State Warriors, getting Dennis Schroeder, it's going to help their bench play. Because they have been pretty dog-ass without Steph Curry on the floor, because they've been trying to run Brandon Podziemski as their backup point guard, because last year they had this guy named Chris Paul, don't know if you know him, Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer, doing really well down in San Antonio. But he helped them have, you know, they were able to outscore opponents with Steph Curry on the bench last season. It's one of the reasons the Golden State Warriors had some success. This year, they cannot. They're being outscored 1.9 points per 100 possessions without Steph Curry on the floor. That's not good. It has been struggling for them when he is not out there. And having a guy like Dennis Schroeder, he is someone that is a playmaker, but he can also score the basketball at a high rate. We have already seen him pop off a few times for Brooklyn this year. We've seen it in a couple of the Grizzlies games. He is a force to be reckoned with. And Pods has just not been good at all this year. Nearly 80% of his minutes have come at the backup point guard position this year, to which it was only 14% his rookie season, where he was all rookie. It's not his skill set. They're asking him to do something that he is not used to doing, and he is really struggling. He has been bad for them this season, really bad. So bad that Golden State Warriors fans have said some horrific things about him on social media. If you want to laugh, just search his name, and you're going to see a couple of things pop up. So I think that this is going to be a very good move for the Golden State Warriors. At the same time, I think it signals that the Brooklyn Nets are open for business, so the Memphis Grizzlies need to make a call. If you can get that deal done, great. I think that would be phenomenal for the Grizzlies moving forward.
Travis Hunter, all-star player, just star for the Colorado Buffaloes, has won the Heisman Trophy over Ashton Gentry in the closest race since 2019.
2009. 2009, closest race since 2009.
2009.
We talked about this with David Cobb for just a little bit, but Travis Hunter is your Heisman winner. And the response to that has been interesting, in my opinion, because even if you are an Ashton Gentry person, like I am, and I think you are too, George.
I am.
Because we recognize how difficult it is for somebody to get you know, like Ashton Jeanty, to get a team like Boise State to the college football playoff, and he is doing it in a literal record-breaking season. He is on pace to still break Barry Sanders' record. It's going to be a bit different, though, and there's going to be an asterisk on it because of how many games he has played. Either way,
if you could say that with most records.
You could say that with most records, and then I could respond to you and say, well, if he didn't sit out halves against teams like Utah State, then he would have broken the record. But then the response to that's going to be, well, he's playing Utah State, so how much can you, you know, count that record? It's like, I don't know. Running that many yards matters. But Travis Hunter is a deserving player. He's more than deserving
100%.
As a Heisman Trophy winner. And that's why today the response has just been odd, because people are trying to pretend as if he isn't as good at either position as he actually is. David Cobb said it best. He has won them football games from the wide receiver position. He has won them football games from the cornerback position. He's so good at both, NFL teams still can't figure out whether he needs to be a wide receiver or a defensive end or a cornerback. I don't know which one he should be. Every time I talk to Gabe about it, he's got a different answer. We've all got different answers, because one game he'll have a phenomenal game at the wide receiver position, then he'll have an amazing defensive game. I don't get why people are trying to rip him down so much. I don't know if it's the Colorado negative bias that we have out there, but he is deserving. He's a 4.0 kid. He did it the right way. He followed Coach Prime. He could have gone other places, but he wanted to be a part of the story at Colorado, and he is one of the main reasons they are in a bowl game this season. It's so impressive that they've done it this season in the conference that they're in. They had one win 2 years ago, Colorado as a program. They have completely turned it around, and Coach Prime wouldn't have been able to do it without a guy like Travis Hunter. So give him his flowers. Stop trying to rip him down. If you wanted Ashton Jeanty to win, I get it. There's a case for him. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't a case for Travis Hunter. And it doesn't mean that what we saw from Travis Hunter isn't something we see very few times. It's a generational type of talent that can take that many snaps on both sides of the football and play at a consistent high level. That is what Travis Hunter did this year. Champ Bailey was the last time we saw it. It's been a long time since Champ Bailey was playing football, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He deserves credit. People need to give him his flowers. It's been kind of driving me crazy today.
The Buffalo Bills have scored 30 or more points in 8 consecutive games. This ties the longest streak in a single season in NFL history. Each of the before teams that have done it had a player that won the MVP that season.
Josh Allen, I had talked to Jeff Calkins about last week, and I said he has locked up the MVP. And I think that Jeff, because he is a Bills fan, I understand it, was a little hesitant to say locked up. Well, after this performance, I think that we can confirm that it is locked up. 48-42 against the Detroit Lions. What a football game. Really good football game. Jared Goff went crazy. 38-59, 494 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Talk about quarterback play. And I don't know if you saw this. There was a great story that came out over the weekend about Jared Goff. And when he was really struggling when he first got to Detroit, he had to walk into Dan Campbell's office, and he was expecting to get benched or even cut during that meeting. And Dan Campbell, soon to be Coach of the Year, hopefully, gave him an inspirational speech, told him he was behind him, and then all of a sudden you've seen Jared Goff become one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. I think you can trust Jared Goff in big games. Just couldn't get it done in this one. I don't necessarily think it was his fault. Just on the other side, you have a Buffalo Bills team that's absolutely cooking at the right time. And it does feel like all of a sudden, because of the injuries that the Lions have had, lost David Montgomery in this game to a torn ACL, absolutely awful.
And a couple players on defense McNeil.
I mean, all of the
Davis.
Players on defense. All of the players on defense. They absolutely insane.
They have a starting defense on the IR right now.
Starting defense on the IR. It's very similar to the Grizzlies of last year, where the people that were out for the Grizzlies would be most teams starting 5.
Yeah.
That's what it is for the Detroit Lions this year. And that's why watching this football game, even though I'm a huge supporter of the Detroit Lions and I want them to make it to the Super Bowl, every time another injury happens, it just feels like that door in the NFC opens up a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And that's why recently we've been talking about a team like the Los Angeles Rams, who are starting to put it together at the end of the season. They've been on a bit of a run. Seattle lost. All of a sudden you look up, Rams are in the playoffs. Could they make some noise in the playoffs? Maybe. But the team to watch out for that is really gaining steam, really gaining steam. There's a lot of drama early in the season. Thought the coach was going to get fired. He stuck around. They figured out the passing game. Philadelphia Eagles.
They're looking dangerous.
They're looking dangerous. I think you're going to have more wide receivers across the NFL complaining about targets and things like that because it's certainly working for A.J. Brown with Jalen Hurts. Now, I know that Jalen Hurts came out and said that he's been battling through an injury. We could tell.
Yep.
But they have really put it together recently, and it does feel like where a few weeks ago, if you had asked me who's going to come out of the NFC, I would have told you Detroit Lions, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And then injury after injury after injury have happened. And that's where, you know, Green Bay Packers looked probably the best they did all season last night. Could they make a run at it? Maybe. Could the Eagles make a run at it? Maybe. Could the Rams make a run at it? Maybe. It's gotten a little bit more interesting in the NFC over the last few weeks.
And, I mean, that's not even including the team that's playing tonight, the Minnesota Vikings, mm-hmm. that have arguably one of the most dangerous offenses, especially passing attacks, in the NFL right now. Also, for what it's worth, I was not exaggerating when I said that the Lions have an entire defense on...
Do you have the tweet?
I do.
Yeah, read it off.
It is from Schefter this morning. Notable defensive injuries this season for the Lions: Aiden Hutchinson, Aleem McNeil, Marcus Davenport, John Kaminsky, Alex Anzalone, Malcolm Rodriguez, Derek Barnes, Jalen Reeves-Maben, Carlton Davis, Ennis Rakestraw Jr., Emmanuel Mosley, and I can't even pronounce that last name or that full name really for that safety, so I'm not going to disrespect him. But that is 12 players, including multiple starters.
Well, Hutchinson was on pace to be one of the best sack seasons we've ever seen before his foot went the wrong direction. And Rico is just like an emotional guy on their defensive end.
Yep.
It's just tragic to see what's happened. It's tragic because you thought finally this Detroit Lions team is going to break through, and they still may. They've got enough talent to still be able to get it done. You still got Jahmyr Gibbs in your backfield. That's certainly going to help. They have a high-powered offense, and it may be able to carry them. But that defense is mostly filled with second-string guys right now. And Dan Campbell's the type of coach that can maximize his talent. He can inspire people. But it's going to be difficult for them in the playoffs when you have teams like the Eagles and the Packers and the Vikings and the Rams really getting going here at the end of the season. They're getting healthier as the season goes on, when unfortunately the Lions are getting unhealthy as the season goes on. So I'm a little bit worried about them. But the Buffalo Bills, AFC, I think they're our hope against the Kansas City Chiefs. I would not be shocked if we see them in the Super Bowl. Josh Allen is playing at an MVP level, the best football of his career. That offense has been high-powered for a long time. If that defense can sustain some consistency, I think that we're going to end up seeing the Bills in the Super Bowl. But, you know, it's also one of those things where I got to see the Kansas City Chiefs lose before I believe it. Just please let us be released from this evil magic of the Kansas City Chiefs this year, and let Josh Allen be our beacon of light.
For what that's worth, a little bit of news on that front as well. Mahomes is now questionable for this weekend with a high ankle sprain, and it could be Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz, look at that.
Starting for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Still in the league. That's going to be it for the Blitz, though. When we come back, we got to wrap up the show. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM, ESPN. Stick around. We're going to start small talk today with my favorite baseball player of all time, just continuing to be an absolute legend. David Ortiz is not only the greatest clutch performer we've ever seen in the playoffs, first ballot Hall of Famer, brought four World Series titles to Boston. He's also a first-ballot Yankee hater. Juan Soto, a new chapter begins on Instagram. First comment, best comment, the Yankees lose from David Ortiz. Continues to be an absolute legend. His Yankees hate will never end. I am so happy it drives Derek Jeter as crazy as it does on the broadcast. A-Rod, good sport about it. You know who isn't? Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter's not amused by David Ortiz and his Yankees lose bit. I hope it never ends. I hope the Yankees continue to lose forever. I'm a bit worried about the free agents that they have signed this year. They have had a good offseason despite losing Juan Soto. But David Ortiz, the legend that he is, will never let that Yankees hate go away. We also got some good news today from Greg Popovich. He suffered a stroke about 6 weeks ago. Very scary. Greg Popovich, arguably the best coach we've ever seen in the NBA. We got some good news today when he said, "No one is more excited to see me return to the bench than the talented individuals who have been leading my rehabilitation process. They've quickly learned that I'm less than coachable." It sounds like Coach Pop is trying to make a return to the sidelines. I would love to see him. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Coach Pop's last season, considering everything he has been through the last few seasons. The Spurs team is a really talented young group of guys, and then you have Chris Paul running around. I would love to see Coach Pop out there. It is just better for the game of basketball when he is involved. So, good news from Coach Pop today from Sham Sarani. If you want to read the full quote, full statement, go to his Twitter and you can see it. But that's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. I want to thank my guests, Harold Grader and David Cobb. We will be back same time, same place tomorrow for the Honorable King George. I'm Connor. Peace.